Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford with the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal, and we thank you for clicking in to Double Coverage, a podcast of the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer. We're going to talk all things Bulldogs, Rebels, SEC, all of that coming up for you in just a moment. I do want to remind you about the memo. Search for it where you search for your regular podcast, and be sure to listen to Derek Russell and Brad Locke as they check out all things news and current events and everything going on in Northeast Mississippi. That's with the memo. Logan, how are you, man?
Well, I'm recovering from a basketball game from Wednesday night. Once basketball and baseball start to get here, you start having those late nights a few nights out of the week. So it's always nice when it should be a slow morning the next morning to kind of sleep in and catch up on that sleep that you lost the night before. So it's kind of what I've been doing so far today.
Well, that's good. You know, the busiest time of the year is when things start to overlap, and you get that a few times. We're getting out of that a little bit right now as football starts to wind down. But, you know, when you get into that November time when you have some basketball non-conference and football still going on full steam ahead, and then you hit that again kind of in the spring with recruiting, spring football and baseball and all that kind of overlapping. But, it's a good time. I still enjoy it. I think you do too. But, it does keep you running at some time.
It does, yeah. It definitely beats digging a ditch for a living, you know. And no offense to the people that are out there doing those type of jobs. They're the people that read the papers. So, proud for those people. I'm just glad I don't have to do it because I don't think I'd be very good at it.
Hey, well, we got lots to talk about in the program today. Why don't you start us off with Dan Mullen? Reportedly, I think that's pretty much been confirmed that he interviewed at Miami. We've seen his name connected with the Maryland job and just some other things. I mean, where does all that stand right now?
Well, it looks like Dan Mullen's going to be Mississippi State's coach next year. You know, and I'm one of these people that really doesn't get excited and jump to all these conclusions about coaching searches, just because I've dealt with Dan Mullen for the last 7 years, and it's been like that pretty much every year. I think 6 out of those 7 years, it's been like that. And, I've seen his name connected with Penn State, Miami. This is the second time Miami's came around, the Florida job, Minnesota, Penn State, just all these different jobs from around the country. His name's connected with them in the past. And then this year it was, USC, the Miami job, Virginia Tech, Georgia, just all these different places. And yeah, I do think that he's been a candidate at a lot of these places, but I don't think he's been necessarily any of these schools' top candidate. So, while he's a hot coaching commodity, I think him and his family is happy here in Starkville. It just seems like they've really kind of made some roots here. He's had 2 children here. Megan's parents have actually moved to Starkville. So, they've got, built some roots here, and I think it would take a lot to get them uprooted, especially when you factor in, Dan Mullen's going to make $4.25 million next year.
Yeah, but there's a difference in being connected and mentioned with a job and interviewing. I know he didn't interview all these places, and as stable and grounded as he looks to be in Starkville, what does that say when he's willing to go and interview? I mean, that's to me, it almost sounds like a little bit of wanderlust. It sounds like a little bit of like maybe this is a good time to consider leaving Starkville. I'm trying to think like Dan Mullen. What would make him say yes to an interview?
Well, I'm just trying to think of it sort of in my perspective. What would make me listen to another opportunity that was out there? I would listen to just about anything. If you offer more opportunity, more money, I mean, you would be crazy not to listen. So, I think that's kind of what he's done in a lot of these situations. I don't necessarily think that he's just ready to jump ship and leave Starkville, but if another opportunity came along, anybody would be crazy to pass up a better opportunity. So it'd be crazy just not to even listen to him. So I think that's kind of what he's doing. I don't think that he's looking to leave Starkville, but if another opportunity came along, I think, it'd be naive to think that he wouldn't listen to him.
Well, Mark Richt has since been named head coach at Miami. I did think, Logan, with those four names that were kind of trotted out there as what I guess was Miami's final four with Mark Richt, Butch Davis, who was the other?
Schiano
and also Mullen. Mullen was the odd candidate in that group of four, the only one that didn't have a real Miami tie. I know he spent some time at Florida, but it's a long way from Gainesville down there to Miami. But I did see on Twitter, Logan, this is not original material here, and I'm sure lots of people have heard it by now, but I did chuckle when I saw someone ask if Mullen goes to Miami, does every school then become the school up north? So that was interesting. Now, we'll talk about that, the school up north and the Egg Bowl here a little bit in a moment. I did think that Mullen, just based on what I heard from you, I did not go to his press conference after the game, but just looking at what I saw on the quote sheet and heard from you, he sounded very subdued after that game. And we'll talk about that some more in a moment. Let's talk Connerly Trophy a little bit. Dak Prescott winning again, becoming the only two-time winner other than Eli Manning, the first one since Eli Manning in 2003. I thought, Logan, that we had three really, really strong candidates from the top three schools. You know, every school has a candidate, and sometimes a smaller school guy has won, from Millsaps, from Delta State, good programs, good small college programs, and they've produced a couple of winners. But I thought between State, Ole Miss, and Southern Miss, it was three very strong candidates this year.
Yeah, I did too. And, I'm sure I was one of the voters. I really didn't have that much trouble voting. I voted Dak Prescott, Laquon Treadwell, and Nick Mullins in that order when I voted. But I didn't have any difficulty choosing that order. But there were three strong candidates. I thought, any of those three could have been deserving of it, because all three of them had really, really strong years, and Chad Kelly had a great year as well at Ole Miss. So, I think, even if Ole Miss could have nominated two players, they would have probably even made their case even bigger to win the Connerly. But, I just looked at it as a perspective who I actually thought. I took all the teams off the table. I just looked at the players themselves, who was the actual best player in the state of Mississippi, and I came up with Dak Prescott, same as I did a year ago. He means so much to Mississippi State as a player. I mean, you take him off that team, and there's no way they win eight games this year. Just the things that he brings to the table from a leadership's perspective. And then you look at his statistics, and they were unbelievable this year. He didn't play that well in the Egg Bowl, and then you take into account that he only played, I think, two series in that Troy game, so he could have racked up some huge statistics in the Troy game, but he had the stomach virus. So just looking at his year overall, I don't think I could have went with anybody else other than Dak.
I thought Dak had an outstanding year, particularly protecting the football. I mean, that's such an important part of what a quarterback does when he handles the ball every play. I know that he had the two big turnovers that kind of set the tone in the Egg Bowl. We'll get to that in a minute. But when you look at four interceptions on the year, and to me, the teams I have covered, and really Chad Kelly to a degree this year, have really struggled in that area at quarterback. Now, I've seen Ole Miss quarterbacks throw lots of interceptions. Kelly is on a hot streak right now, and he's got 12 interceptions this season. He doesn't have the fumbles that Bo Wallace struggled with at times. When Wallace would have multiple turnover games, lots of times there was a fumble in there somewhere. And Chad Kelly just hasn't had that. Now, he's thrown 12 interceptions, but he hasn't thrown an interception now in his last three games. He's played three straight turnover-free games, and he hasn't thrown an interception in his last 105 passes. That goes back to the early fourth quarter at Auburn on October 31st. So I've been real impressed with the way Dak has protected the football all year, and he became a much better passer, had his best season as a passer. That being said, I voted for Laquon Treadwell, And I'll tell you, Logan, I tend to in these awards, number one, I think there's a big team element to it. And I went into the Egg Bowl thinking that I would vote for Treadwell or Prescott, whoever won and had the better game. The bottom line is neither of them really impacted the Egg Bowl in a huge way. But to watch Treadwell recover from the injuries, watch him become the really incredibly physical receiver that he was this year with five straight 100-yard games, a 1,000-yard season. I really liked what I saw from him, and I give the guys that I see every week just a little bit more benefit of the doubt. Lots of times, that Connerly choice is pretty easy. This year there were three really strong candidates from the Big Three schools. What Nick Mullins did or has done this season at Southern Miss and in that turnaround, not just to win some games and get bowl eligible, but to win the division and qualify for the Conference USA championship game, that's very impressive. But I really like what I saw from Laquon Treadwell this year. And again, I can't stress enough the physicality that he brings to the position. And while he didn't have a 100-yard game against State, Logan, one of his catches that went for like 17 yards, to me just resonated and just identified his whole year. And I think talking with Matt Wyatt on Head to Head earlier this week, he said Jamal Peters was the defender, and he was sitting there, he was breaking on the ball, he was in position for what could have been an interception, but Treadwell just came back to the ball and just got those hands in front of him and just snatched it and went the other way and picked up 17 yards. So I voted for Treadwell for the Connerly. Shifting gears a little bit, looking at bowl games, Logan, Ole Miss could go back to the Sugar Bowl here. I mean, I think many fans are considering this a lock, a done deal. You know, all that has to happen is something that happens so many college football Saturdays, and that is for Alabama to win. All Alabama has to do is beat Florida to put Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl for the first time since 1969. I think you're going to hear more Roll Tides coming out of Oxford on Saturday than you've ever heard before. But there's still a game to play, Logan, and when there's a game to play, you know, there's a chance that somebody could win and a chance that they could lose. Well, what are the chances you think that Florida beats Alabama?
Well, Alabama looked kind of down to earth. They actually looked like a beatable team, I guess, against Auburn. Of course, you can kind of throw the records out the window in a rivalry game like the Iron Bowl. But Florida just hasn't played the same ball that it had when it had a Greer at quarterback. They're not the same team. Their defense is really, really well, and you know more about Florida than I do, having gone to Gainesville and seen them this year. But you know, I definitely am very familiar with Jeff Collins. I know what he brings to the table defensively. I'm not surprised at all that he's having success at Florida. I do think that Florida's defense is good enough to slow Derrick Henry down at times, but I don't think Florida's offense is good enough to do anything with Alabama's defense. So I do think Alabama's going to win. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game at all, but I do think Alabama's going to win and pad, a couple of touchdowns, maybe 14-17-point lead into that fourth quarter and kind of take that game. And I do think Ole Miss will be in the Sugar Bowl. You and I kind of talked about that, the Egg Bowl, that whoever won that game was probably going to be in New Orleans at the end of it. So Ole Miss won that game. They're looking to probably go to New Orleans, which I'm not a big New Orleans fan. I know you're kind of from that area, so it'll be kind of a homecoming a little bit for you, and that's definitely a good thing. I'm not crazy about New Orleans anyway. I do like the food down there. I definitely can't do anything about the food, but I'm not a New Orleans, I'm not a Memphis guy either.
Well, I'll tell you this, I'm not a French Quarter guy. You know, I kind of like New Orleans from Canal Street to the river. You know, the CBD, that area is a little bit cleaner, a little bit safer. I enjoy going to the French Quarter if it's along the river. I'll do Café du Monde and walk around Jackson Square a little bit, and so I enjoy that. But when I was growing up, we went to New Orleans not for the city per se as much as going down there to see Saints games. I mean, from like you know, elementary school until high school, I'd catch about two Saints games a year, and that was always a lot of fun. So the Rebels will get me there to cover the Sugar Bowl. If Alabama beats Florida, I'm like you, Logan. I think Florida's defense keeps this game from being a blowout and keeps it close for a while. I think it's going to take Alabama a little bit of time to gain some separation. I do think it will get there, and I think Alabama will win the game. We'll see. I'll tell you this, if they don't win the game, and I want to talk about where State's going to a bowl game here in just a second. If Alabama doesn't win the SEC championship game, things get very murky at that point. The Sugar Bowl is required to take the SEC champion if it is not in the playoff, and I don't think that that Florida would be advancing from number 18 in the college football playoff rankings into the top four. So Florida goes immediately into the Sugar Bowl. You would think that Alabama, with two losses, would still find its way into a New Year's Six game, which would leave Ole Miss going to the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, still a very nice reward. But if something crazy happened and Alabama lost in the SEC championship game and then lost out of a New Year's Six game, they would end up in the Citrus Bowl. The Citrus folks would have a choice. They would be able to choose the SEC team that they would want. They're not bound to those rankings the way the Sugar Bowl is, but I could not see the Citrus Bowl in that scenario taking Ole Miss over Alabama. So there's the possibility that if Florida does win the SEC championship game, that there is a possibility you could see Ole Miss, you know, tumble below the Citrus Bowl down to a Hall of Fame or Gator Bowl range. But I still think even in that scenario that Alabama ends up somewhere in one of those New Year's Six at large spots. So State 8-4, Logan. What's the speculation for a bowl game there?
I'm seeing mostly Belk Bowl, which is in Charlotte. That's kind of what I've seen most of the season this year. I just think that's a bowl game Mississippi State hasn't been to here recently. I don't know that they've ever been to it, actually. But I just think that's kind of where I'm seeing that they'll wind up. And most of them have Mississippi State playing Virginia Tech in that game, which, you know, I'm assuming Beamer is going to coach that game. I haven't, you know, dug that deep into it yet, but that would be his final hurrah, and that would be a big game for the Virginia Tech fans for sure. So, you know, I really think that that's where they're going to end up. I saw some stuff yesterday where the Tax Slayer Bowl, which is the old Gator Bowl, was not considering Mississippi State. I can definitely see why. I mean, that would be the third time in, I think, the last 5 years that they've been to that bowl. So just probably a lot of times bowls and the SEC themselves want to switch things up, send people to different places. So, you know, that would make sense for Mississippi State to go to the Belk Bowl. You know, I think Mississippi State's out of the Liberty Bowl conversation, which I'm glad of that. And, you know, there's still some an outside shot at the Outback Bowl or the Citrus Bowl or possibly even the Texas Bowl. But I really think Mississippi State's going to wind up in Charlotte.
Well, I tell you what, it's always good to be out of the Liberty Bowl conversation, Logan. And, you know, I think you could go to the Liberty Bowl, and you did that, and I think you can have a nice experience with different things to do in Memphis and whatnot. For me, it always comes back to the venue there. It's a terrible venue. It's a terrible place to work a game, to watch a game in that press box, to, you know, you can't see behind those window panes if you're on the second row. It's just an aging stadium, and, you know, to me, that's the biggest drawback for Memphis football is the venue there, and it's not something that's easily changed, although I do think they could make an effort to put some glass in that press box and get rid of those panes, get some sliding glass up there. But anyway, good to be outside of the Liberty Bowl conversation. I did like it. I liked seeing, Logan, when the SEC added contracts with the Belk Bowl in Charlotte and with the Texas Bowl. I think that's what they call it in Houston.
That's right.
When you look at those, and those are lower level bowl agreements now with the conference. But when you look at at Houston and Charlotte and Jacksonville, I mean, and even Nashville with the Music City Bowl, you're looking at NFL stadiums for all of those games. So they're all very nice modern venues, very nice places to play. And that's and that gives you most of the SEC bowl games there. So anyway, maybe State will end up in Charlotte for the Belk Bowl, and I know that's a little bit of a disappointment for some fans when you had a chance to maybe be in the Sugar Bowl had you beaten your rival. But I like the thought of playing in Charlotte and in Houston in those stadiums. So I think it will be a good experience. Let's talk about the Egg Bowl a little bit, Logan. Looking back here, that game obviously turned in the first quarter. After that, it was just a matter of Ole Miss kind of staying on top, you know, holding that lead and not letting State get too close. And after the Rebels were ahead 21-0 in the first quarter, you know, I thought it was big when they went down late in the third quarter and got the field goal. After having missed a couple of field goals earlier, you know, State comes out of the dressing room, scores 10 unanswered points. If Ole Miss misses that kick there, if Wunderlich misses a third field goal, then all of a sudden, you know, it's still 28-13. State's got the ball. If they go down and punch one in, you know, I mean, that's the story of comebacks there. I thought it was really big that Ole Miss could drive and get the field goal there in the third quarter after State had chipped away at the lead.
Yeah, and that was the tougher of the three field goals that he attempted in that game. And I think that was huge, you know, especially considering the fact that, you know, his confidence had to have been down, you know, from missing two, you know, what seemed to be fairly easy field goals. And then you was a 48-yarder that he kicked in that one?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 48, yeah, so almost 50 there at the end.
Exactly. That's a very difficult kick, and, you know, he made it look easy. You know, I thought that was a huge turning point, too. When the momentum had started to swing back in State's favor and got the crowd back into the game, to silence the crowd with a field goal there, keep it a two-score game, and, you know, ultimately that was huge. I mean, you look at the final score, it was an 11-point win for Ole Miss, and, you know, Mississippi State had a chance with an onside kick there at the end to possibly even make it a one-score game. So that field goal turned out to be huge. I mean, it made Mississippi State have to work that much harder to climb out of that hole that it dug itself earlier. Mississippi State had, you know, 21 points. It's tough to even at home to climb back out of that hole. You know, 21 points is very difficult. It was what, 20? What was the score halftime? I know State had three.
28-3.
Yeah, that's very, very difficult to climb out of, especially, you know, when you're factoring in that you're playing a top 20 team in Ole Miss, you know, a quality team and a rival that's capable of putting up points. You know, Mississippi State, you know, just didn't have a chance to climb back out of it.
Yeah, Ole Miss twice led by 25 points in the game. The second time after Jordan Wilkins scored on the touchdown run there early in the fourth quarter, and that negated State's 10 unanswered points. That was 10 more from Ole Miss right there following the field goal with a touchdown drive and Wilkins scoring on a 36-yard, I believe it was, run right there. Logan, I had a lot of people express the opinion before the game. I heard folks say it's going to be really, really hard for Ole Miss to win on Dak Prescott's senior night. And my thought then was, well, how much harder can it be? I mean, it's going to be hard simply playing in that venue. The road team had not won. Ole Miss had not won there since 2003. State had won in Oxford in 2010. But in both of those games, in 3 and 10, the home team was bad. State was bad in 2003. Ole Miss was bad in 2010. You know, I mean, when there were two competitive teams, it had been a long time since the visiting team had won. So, you know, that in and of itself was going to make it hard for Ole Miss going into that game. But then Dak Prescott had just thrown for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns at Arkansas. How much better could he be?
Exactly. You know?
You know, and I honestly thought, and I want to hear your take on this. I thought senior night worked against him a little bit. You could see how emotional he was before the game, crying on the video board, big emotional hug there with Dan Mullen. I think he was a little amped up. You know, I don't know if he wasn't protecting the ball well on that fumble. You know, I know that there was good placement of the helmet there from Ole Miss linebacker DeMarcus Gates. That was on State's first possession with the opening kick, and they were moving the ball. They were across the 50 and were ripping off big clips and big gains, and Gates forced the fumble. And then, it was their third possession when Prescott threw the interception. Tony Bridges returned it for a touchdown. On that particular play, he was flushed out of the pocket by Ole Miss pressure, which he faced all night long. I thought at that point he was pressing with the decision that he made. He didn't throw it out of bounds. He tried to force it in what was a pretty small window, and Tony Bridges came back and made a good play.
Yeah, I agree with you, Parrish. I think the emotions of senior day got to him. I think he was trying to do too much out there. And I mean, you saw the type of competitor he was. Dak Prescott's not going to give up in any circumstance whatsoever, but he also has to get the rest of the the other 10 guys that are out there with him to be on the same page. And Mississippi State's offensive line was horrendous against Ole Miss, and they were bad against Alabama as well. But the factor, the center was the only offensive lineman that was actually in his position throughout the game against Ole Miss. They had some injuries. Rufus Warren had the kidney stones. Couldn't start at left tackle. They put a redshirt freshman in there at left tackle. Ended up having to move him from left tackle to right tackle when the right tackle got hurt. Moved the left guard to left tackle, moved the right guard to left guard, and then inserted another redshirt freshman in there at right guard. So they had four offensive linemen out of position, and Dak Prescott was running for his life a lot of that ball game. But I think the bad start that Dak got off to was certainly due to the emotions of senior night, just trying to do too much, trying to be too perfect, and especially on that interception. I mean, you're already down 14 points at that point. You need to put points up on the board. You can't afford to fall behind anymore. And he just tried to force a play that he usually throws out of bounds. He admitted that after the ball game, that that's usually a play that he'll just throw it out of bounds and move on to the next one. But when you're down 14 points to your rival, you need to put points up on the board, especially against an offense like Ole Miss that could put up points in a hurry. You need to get points on the board yourself. And, it went the other way. That dug State's hole even deeper. And then, like I said earlier, they just couldn't climb out of it.
All right. So Ole Miss concludes the regular season 9-3, Mississippi State 8-4. Both of these programs will go to nice bowl games. A few minutes left here, Logan. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some basketball. I know State's coming off the Texas Southern game, as you were talking about. Ole Miss last played last Saturday, 67-54 win at Bradley. The Rebels play UMass in a neutral site game Saturday afternoon. Neutral site is going to be up there at Springfield, Massachusetts, so it's not going to be extremely neutral, but it is the Rebels' first opportunity against an RPI top 50 opponent. UMass right now at number 50, like Ole Miss 5-2, trying to work out some kinks and see if they can get on a little bit of a hot streak. They need to shoot better from the perimeter. That was something Andy Kennedy was talking about earlier in the week. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with State right now.
Well, Mississippi State is 4-3. They've reeled off three straight wins. They won their final game of the Puerto Rico tip-off. They were blown out by Miami in the first game down there, and then lost a tough 74-72 game against Texas Tech. And then they come back win the finale against Missouri State, and they've reeled off two wins after that, UT Martin on Saturday, and then Texas Southern on Wednesday night. Now Mississippi State gets a 10-day break. They've got finals coming up, and then they'll play their first true road game next Saturday against University of Missouri, Kansas City. I've never even heard of that school. They have actually two back-to-back road games coming up. They'll play in Kansas City, and then they'll turn around and play Florida State in Tallahassee the middle of next week. So it's going to be a long time before I see Mississippi State play basketball again. Obviously, the women's team is doing pretty well. Lost their first game on Wednesday night at Texas, which was a top 10 battle there. Mississippi State's women are looking really good. The men are playing really good offensively, but they're really bad defensively. And that's something Ben Howland said he was going to work on this over this 10-day break that they get in practice, is just working on their defense and trying to get better in that aspect.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at DJ Double Cover, and you can follow Logan and I individually at Parrish Alford, at Logan Lowry. Lots of good stuff coming out of those Twitter accounts, and remember to check out the memo where you go to search for your podcast. That's with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, all things news and current events in Northeast Mississippi, another production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Thank you for being with us.